Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is CSN's Capitals Faceoff.
Welcome into our new edition of the Caps Faceoff podcast on Thursday, August 24th. I am Rob Carlin. I am here with Tariq El-Bashir, our Capitals insider, as the Caps season now is just a couple of weeks away from training camp and media day getting going. Players are starting to trickle in. Tariq's been out at Kettler a couple of times talking to players, and then a guy who knows the franchise is good or better than anyone. Mike Vogel is our special guest today, and you guys have been out. I know Tariq has. I assume you've been out there as guys are starting to trickle back in now. It's starting to get that feeling again of hockey season is right around the corner.
Yeah, I haven't been over yet. I just got back from the wilds of Maine, which was a much-needed getaway. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back and talking to a couple guys. And it's 2 weeks from today. We'll be in the air and headed to South Florida for the rookie tournament, which for me is the actual beginning of the grind that starts anew every year right after Labor Day. So looking forward to that.
Not that Vogue's needs an excuse to take vacation, but I think you're the only guy who made it to every single game, preseason, regular season, and playoffs, and every practice.
Yeah,
it's a grind. Grind with a capital G. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot.
It's a lot, but it's a labor of love too.
Yeah.
And the good thing is every day is different. You never know how it's gonna play out.
Right.
Good, bad, and different. You know, it's not like you walk into a movie theater in 5 minutes. Yeah, I'm pretty sure this one's going to turn out.
And as I always say to people who are like, oh, man, that's a grind, and nights and holidays and weekends and travel, I'm like, right, but I cover sports
for a living. You're still getting paid to watch it.
I'm not out digging ditches or anything on a hot summer day.
Yeah. Right.
So all in all, I don't think any of us can really complain.
Getting back to your original question, I have gone out there a few times, and the group is getting bigger. You know, it doesn't mean a whole lot, but I'm always curious to see which young guys kind of come back in town first, which veterans, feel like they need a little extra work or want to get in early. Braden Holtby's been out there. Philip Grubauer hasn't typically been an early arrival, but he said he and his girlfriend wanted to get settled back in. So he's back. So, you know, you got both goalies. John Carlson lives here year-round now. His wife is local, so he's been out there pretty much all summer.
Yep.
So those are the three NHL guys. But then some prospects have also been there. Jonas Siegenthaler from Switzerland came in before everyone else because he wanted to not only get into shape and kind of, you know, get comfortable here in North America, but he also wanted to just kind of show the team that, hey, I'm serious about seeing some time here in Washington. He knows he'll probably start in Hershey, but he's serious about it. Vitek Vanacek, the number four goalie in the organization, is here. And Nathan Walker came all the way from Sydney. Again, he's a young guy who's eyeing a spot, and there's a big time difference between Australia and here, and he wanted to
nice to let the coaches know that they're in this. Hey, we're here on our set here. We're doing a video podcast in addition to our audio podcast, which has been happening throughout the summer. Before we continue on and get Vogue's thoughts on this very much new look Washington Capitals, let's first have a word from our sponsors. Thank you so much to the sponsors. Very important to our survival here on the Caps Faceoff podcast. So, I mean, Tariq's talking about these new names. And, you know, I was watching the NHL is doing their 31 and 31 previews, and they're talking about the Penguins last night and how what's amazing about the Penguins and what's amazing about the Blackhawks, and probably a big reason why these two teams have won multiple Stanley Cups over the last handful of years, is they're able to pick these kids out and pop them in a playoff run, and these kids produce. The Caps have been so loaded with top-end veteran talent for so long. There was no place for any of these kids, really, other than emergency call-up. But the Blackhawks and Penguins got that youth, that infusion of excitement and desire to earn a spot that separated them and helped them win these cups. We might see that from the Caps, which is something we haven't seen since this crew came up as the Young Guns.
I think if you go back to the beginning of the 15-16 season, so what, 2 years ago, Pittsburgh was floundering a little bit. Mike Johnson was the head coach. People were saying they had arguably, at that time, the worst farm system in the NHL. Didn't have a lot of top-end prospects. 2 months later, Johnson's out, Mike Sullivan's up, and Sullivan is a guy who'd spent a couple of months coaching that Wilkes-Barre Scranton team, and quick study, it figured out who could help him at the NHL level and brought some of those guys up, and like you said, Rob, they jumped right in and they helped him, and that was huge for Pittsburgh, because for a decade, for the better part of a decade, when these guys had that 1-2 punch up the middle of Crosby and Malkin, they didn't have enough money left under the cap to put good wingers on those lines. So every year at the trade deadline, here comes Billy Guerin. Here comes Alexei Ponikarovsky. Here comes random winger XYZ who you can plug in here for a couple of months and look for some late magic and try to win a cup. Only it worked once. But this is much more sustainable, as we've seen. They've won two cups in a row now with these guys. And you got to look at them as being a team that could win three cups in a row because, again, those guys aren't splintering and getting scattered to the wind. They're still cost-controlled, and they're still cheap, and they're still going to be helping Pittsburgh win hockey games for a couple of years at those low dollars. And that in an era right now where the salary cap has leveled off a good bit compared to what it was a decade or so ago, that cost-controlled talent is critical.
You're starting to see more and more these rosters that are top-heavy. The Penguins have one of them. Chicago, I know Chicago got bounced in the first round, but they still won the Western Conference last year. And the Capitals are starting to go in that direction. You look at the top 10 or so players. They're $4 million or more. Mm-hmm. And then there's not much of a middle class there.
No,
there are a couple guys who
it's reflecting the world, right?
Right. Right. No,
and then you got five or six guys this year that are going to be on veteran minimums or their entry level contracts.
Yeah. And they're going to need. They're going to need some. Look, here's the other thing. You mentioned this, that the Caps have had this glut of talent or this core of talent that's been here, and a couple of those guys have gone now. But I think what we're looking at now is these guys who you would think normally, a lot of these guys, Vrana, Walker, Barber, Bowie, Lewington, Juice, are going into their third year, Travis Boyd, going into their third year pro. By now, you'd think you'd at least have a little bit of a handle, a little bit of a look. Some of these guys would have had some cups of coffee. But like you said, Rob, this team is so good. And the other thing, the wild card in all this, was that Greg Smith and Benny Reese were so good at their jobs, too, in taking care of these guys that they had the least man games lost over the last couple of years. So the opportunities weren't there for these guys. So now, I think a lot of times guys will come into a camp like this and maybe they got five or eight games of NHL experience and that's something that they can draw off and maybe it gives them a little bit of a springboard. But so many of these guys don't even have that.
Right.
Now, they've been pro for a couple of years and they got to a cup final at the minor league level in their first year. So they got a few things that they can hang their hats on. But we don't know what Christian Juice and Travis Boyd,
Nathan Walker is a great example. Nathan Walker, number 89 overall pick from 2014, 23 years old. Mm-hmm. He's kind of cut his teeth. He's paid his dues.
Yeah.
He still hasn't played in an NHL game. I think it's going to happen this year.
But it would have happened last year if
there had been injuries.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Well, and the interesting thing is because a lot of these guys, because the Caps are so good for so long, you're talking about a lot of low first-round picks or second-round picks. So there's not like this guy that's been knocking on the door for a couple of years, but like you referenced with Pittsburgh, Penguins fans didn't know a lot of these kids were going to come up and produce.
Yeah.
So, maybe one or two of these kids are better for whatever reason when their opportunity comes at the NHL level that it's the right fit with the right line combination that even though Caps fans aren't necessarily saying, well, I can't wait to see Nathan Walker, whatever, maybe you plug him in and for whatever reason it works and he's better than we ever anticipated. And that's what I think you're hoping from this crew of kids that you just mentioned, so one of them pops in and just pops.
You didn't have Jake Gensel scoring
right,
15 goals.
Right. I mean, no one.
Roster, Tom Kuhn-Nakalala.
Right. And who cares, honestly, for Pittsburgh, who cares what they do this season?
Right.
They did it when they needed it. Mm-hmm. It was magic, you know, genie in a bottle.
I was talking to a diehard Penguins fan the other day, and we were talking about three-peating. And you know what he said? He said, you know what, after winning two in a row, he goes, they've played some long, hard, you know, deep runs into June. He goes, if they didn't even make the playoffs, he goes, we can still smile.
Yeah, they got house, nothing but house money.
Yeah, house
there
money
right
at this point.
But the point being that you hope a Siegenthaler comes in and you go, I didn't realize he could do this X, Y, and Z. And for the first time, look, I've been covering the Caps for 6 years now, on and off, hosting, not out at the practices or games as much, but certainly, you know, engrossed in what's happening day to day. This is the most intrigued I am, because last couple of years was like, they're going to win the cup. But this is the most intrigued to see what they are.
There's going to be training camp battles.
Right, to what they are, who's going to fit in where, and how they're going to make this all work.
Two of the veterans I've talked to out there at Kettler, Braden Holtby and John Carlson, both said they're also excited about just having some young energy around. You know, having some guys fighting for spots, you know, is going to bring a level of edge and competitiveness and intensity to Kettler Capitals Iceplex that wasn't really there the last couple of years on practice days.
When you go back to pre-salary cap era, that was a tried and true. There were a couple of things that general managers used to do routinely, and one of them was load up the roster with young players early in the season because they got the fresh legs. They want to impress. They want give them a chance then. Give them a few weeks to show what they have and let the vets sort of slowly ease their way back into shape. And then by November, you kind of have an idea of who can hang and who can't, and you send those other guys back to the farm. But the other thing is, if it's still not working out, make a deal. Find another team that's a little disappointed in its start, and let's flip. Chris Simon, Andre Nikolic, and Michael Nylander, these guys are all guys who came to Washington in November, pre-salary cap. That was David Poile's go-to move. If things, Larry Murphy's another one.
A month in?
Let's shuffle the deck a little bit here, and let's find another team that needs to shuffle the deck. We'll make something. We'll see what happens here. Can't do that anymore. So you build your team now generally from June 15th. To about July 15th, and that's that month is when you build it and you put it together. You could tweak it, but you can't really make wholesale changes to your team in stream anymore, so to speak.
Well, and it's funny because, so, you know, we're talking for 10 minutes now about the youth and these kids and how they're going to work their way in, because everyone sees the Caps as being blown up and they're not going to be what they were, and who knows what the Caps are. And you know, you hear some people saying, you know, is this even a playoff team? And you look, you're like really, step back.
Yes.
Just step back from the disappointment.
20-second timeout.
Yeah, let me get a 20. We might need to go full here on this one. I mean, you got a team with Alex Ovechkin, Nicholas Backstrom, Braden Holtby, John Carlson, Evgeny Kuznetsov.
Niskanen, Dmitry Orlov.
Right. I mean, you're looking at a core that is still really upper echelon. A lot of those guys are upper echelon players that's still your baseline with, you know, a Barry Trotz coach who's been through so much. So, you know, is this the 120-point Caps of the last couple of years? No. But this is a playoff team that is searching for that something magical to happen come April.
I think they're good enough to be a playoff team, but I do think that one or two, maybe even more of those kids that we've talked about, the Siegenthalers, the Walkers, the Barbers, one or two of those guys are going to have to be a revelation, I think, for it to happen. You know,
you think they could be, it's a little murkier?
Well, my point is, like you said, these last 2 years that we looked in, and this was, you know, 118, 120-point team, and you could see that going into the season. And like you say, we know that this year's not. So, okay, but last year, you're looking at that 120-point team, and you know that even if you're devastated by, you know, injuries and other mayhem, you're still going to make the playoffs. That margin for error is sort of evaporated.
Right,
so now you try to get to 100 points.
Right.
This conceivably to me is a 100-point team. But if enough things go wrong and go awry, you get a little south of that. We've seen teams miss the playoffs with 97.
I would say 88 points is rough.
So, you know, there's not a lot of wiggle room. You know, 100 points used to be, that was a good season. But in the age of loser points, 100 points, it'll get you in every time. Nobody's ever racked up 100 and not gotten in. But they have racked up 97 and not gotten in. So your wiggle room is... things can go wrong, and they do in this game frequently. And you see other teams come up. Carolina's got a pretty good hockey team. Teams like Philadelphia and New Jersey are starting to run. And then you got the Rangers, who to me, I mean, I see this every year. The Rangers seem to be ripe for a little bit of a plummet or a nosedive. It doesn't seem to happen.
Yeah.
Credit to Alain Vigneault, but it's hard to see them sort of hold.
When does Father Time catch up with Henrik Lundqvist?
Yeah, I would say, you know, losing Derek Stepan hurts, but getting Kevin Shattenkirk helps. I think they're a team that kind of treaded water to a certain extent, but I think Lundqvist is the key there. But, you know, getting back to the Caps, you know, when I look at the way this team is structured, you know, I see four solid centers.
Sure.
I see a number one goaltender. I see a number 1A, one of the best backups in the league. I see a really good shutdown pair in Orlov and Niskanen. I like John Carlson. And my concerns are twofold. It's everyone after those top 3D. I'm not really worried about the wingers, even though it would be nice to get 40 again from Ovechkin. I'm worried about after those top 3D and then the mentality of the group. Like, the guys, I mean, when they come back, are they fully engaged and ready to take another run at it, or are they still like a balloon that's had the air let out a little bit and you kind of get off to kind of a soft start and then it spirals out of control?
Well, that's where these young kids are going to have to. Because
that's going to be
key. And I wouldn't blame this core if there is that balloon air coming out. This is a lot of years of a lot of disappointment, but maybe with a position battle here, maybe with a kid that's like, he's flying around at 110 in practice and like, well, I'm only at like 93.
Yeah.
I got to ramp it up a little bit. Yeah. So maybe you're hoping something like that. And then look, the Barry Trotz situation. I mean, this is a guy in his last year of a four-year deal. I don't think he's a coach that is necessarily worried. He's been through so much and, you know, he knows who he is and what he does.
Number six on the all-time wins list.
Right, but he does have a little bit of pressure
that
he needs to get off a quick start.
Yeah.
On a really tough opening in the schedule.
Yeah, the first month of 12
on the road to start.
Yeah. As it always
is. So it's like
the building schedule.
Yeah, it's like boom. You know, they gotta kind of hit the road running because
it's hard in this league too to dig out of that early ditch if you dig into it. Not a lot of teams. You know, the 07-08 Caps were able to do it. They started 6-14-1
dead
under Hanlon, bottom worst team in the league, and managed to make the playoffs. And they had. And so that's going from game 21 to 82. They went from bottom to actually winning the division, but they needed every one of those 82 games. It was game 82 that they did it.
I'll never forget that phone call that Thanksgiving morning at like 7:15 a.m. Tark, you head to Kettler? You should be.
You are now.
Oh!
That was a bit of a dagger.
I want to play a game. I want to play a game with Vogues. I'm going to hand you a pen, Vogues, and I want you to indulge us and give us your opening night lineup.
Ooh. Ooh.
Hey, he shrugs like, I know. I love it.
No pressure. No pressure. We're 2.5 weeks away from training camp opening.
It's always fun to kind of revisit them and see how close you got.
But it's always nice live on a podcast.
Yeah.
Hey, here's the pressure. We just told you this team's going to look totally different, and we don't know after the top three defensemen. But tell me you're over.
And I'm the last guy to do predictions normally too.
Yeah, he's not a big predictions guy. I've learned that over the years.
So while you're doing that and as you're thinking hockey, let's talk about the beard and the flowing locks you got there. I mean, I remember the first time I went out there, you know, years ago, whatever. I probably briefly met him or however many years ago it was now, and I was like, who's the cool cat over there with the flowing locks? And looks like he just showed up from a jazz club. You've been cultivating this look?
Yeah, well, it comes and goes. I get bored with the
so it's actually it shorter long, than it was
short,
the year.
It's
yeah.
long and it's short. And one of my really long ones was a guy asked me to star in a graphic novel that he wrote. So he asked me to grow it out because I was playing a typecasting, I guess, but I was playing a German, which I am, but a freak show carnival owner in the early 1970s, a guy named Rictus Finch.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, these pictures are something else, but so, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah,
was
for the folks out there who don't actually know Mike Bogle, which is probably most of you, he leads a more interesting life than you do.
He's the most interesting man alive.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I mean, the stories, they go on and they go on. Like, my favorite all-time Mike Bogle story is how...
You keep working on the opening line. Yeah. We'll talk about you.
He once told me that he had never purchased a car from like more than $500.
String of $100 cars.
String of $100 cars.
In the 1980s.
Yep.
What? The stereo that I took out of those cars to put into the next one actually cost more than the stereo. It was just one of those things where, like, my second car was... I was paying for it for 2 years when it was in the junkyard, and it was a real hard lesson because I was right out of college. I'm like, man, I'm never doing that again. So basically throughout my 20s, every time I needed a car, I
you just went and bought one.
Pull $100 together and give it to my brother, who's an auto mechanic. That helped too. So my brother's got a garage, and he would find some beater for $100. And I would drive that. Usually you get out for $100, I would get a year out of it. Now, two of them caught on fire. One with me in it.
Just two of them caught on fire.
Only
just
one
as
when
I was
driving
down the road.
No, the other one, I was walking away, and I turned around, and it was on fire. But
did we know why, care why, or did you just walk away and go, oh, it's someone else's problem now?
No, my bedroom was in the truck. So I kind of sucked. What are you going to do?
I'm picturing in my head, Tarek, have you seen Good Will Hunting?
Yeah.
Like, I'm picturing the car that they got from Matt Damon for his 21st birthday.
Absolutely, yes.
Where he's like, this is the ugliest car I've ever seen in my whole life.
A great movie.
I'm just picturing you going through a string of like, well, that was part of a Monte Carlo, and that looks like it was part of a Chevy.
Yeah.
And your brother's just like, it's fine. It's good. She'll run.
Gave new meaning to the term bad ride these days.
All right, I'm taking a sneak peek over there. He's got a lineup that looks a little like mine, but there's some differences.
Well, I saw you handed him a piece of paper. Is that a cheat sheet?
Actually, it's an incomplete cheat sheet. I was just showing him what I had sketched out this morning, but it's different than mine. So,
well, let me ask you this as you're doing it, because the biggest question always becomes, do you have 19 and 8 together or 92 and 8?
I got 92 and 8 together.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be that's always the most intriguing, because for years we've seen the desire to break up 19 and 8, but every time you do, they just sort of
find each other again.
Slowly come back together, because you got a guy who's great at setting up goals and the guy who's the best at scoring them. So it's hard to fight that urge whenever you have like
10 years of chemistry.
Yeah, and just you have a couple of games where things go south. You're like, well, I know how to fix this. Let's put back.
Pins down. We got an answer.
More or less.
Except for, I think we do have one TBD.
and I'm missing a guy here.
That would be Connolly.
I put him there.
Oh, okay.
So I guess it could be Vrana. But my opinion is Vrana's going to, I'd put him there, but he's going to have to earn it.
Okay. For the people at home who don't see this.
This is a podcast,
let's read it.
Yeah, so we've got Ovechkin, and you got Kuznetsov, and you got Oshie on the first line.
That's
so
your first line.
92-77. Second line, he's got Burakovsky, who's comfortable on both sides.
And Connolly, who's comfortable on both sides.
Connolly's both sides. On the right, playing with Nicklas Backstrom.
I could see Wilson seeing a little time on there, too.
Okay.
I think it's
going to
be very fluid. I think guys are going to be – I think it's going to be a little bit of a mix and match for a while until Barry – once Barry settles on something, he tends to stick with it. But when he doesn't, you know, when he doesn't like what he sees, he's as Bruce Boudreau as anybody.
Is this putting Connolly there, is that to get Connolly going and giving him opportunities with a Backstrom?
I like a lot of things about Connolly's game. I think he's got good wheels. I think he's got a good nose for the net sometimes.
Does that put him on the second unit power play?
He's got to be more consistent. I don't know about power play yet. I'd have to.
Stop dropping all these sudden quizzes. I just got back from Maine, man.
I like your third line, but there is a question mark. You've got...
I can see Connolly playing there, too. That line was pretty effective during the playoffs.
Vrana, Eller, and Wilson, although you said you might see Wilson on the second
line. And Vrana could be higher as well. I mean, I think there's a lot of flux, and there's a lot of upward and downward mobility for guys.
I think
The hope is, by the way, is that Tom Wilson does go top six because he's earned top six.
He's certainly earned top nine. He's earned the promotion to the third line.
Let's see.
Potentially, yeah, I think he's just a kid still.
The only place where we actually totally agree is on that fourth line where you've got Nathan Walker on the left, Jay Beagle playing center, and Devontae Smith-Pelly, the new addition who was bought out by the Devils, on the right side. Your D pairs... Interesting. You got, you know, 9-2, Niskanen and Orlov.
They were really good together.
Together. You can't break them up. But yeah. You've got
really good.
You've got young Juice.
Well, and
next to Christian Juice.
Oh, really?
And it could be Juice might be better with Orpik.
Could be.
So
he's a lefty though. So if you were going to put him, and Orpik likes the left side.
Right.
So you put Juice on the right side. That'd be.
Yeah, well, no, you're getting into some. I don't think you went from my talks with Brian Helmer. I think Juice is going to be better off with Carly there.
So Aaron Ness, does he fit in there somewhere?
Yeah, I think Ness has a shot. He's a guy who could get plugged into that third pair. He's comfortable playing.
Taylor Chorney is comfortable
on the right
playing
side.
With
Taylor Chorney can play on the right side and with Orpik. Yeah. He'll definitely get more ice and see more time than he did last year. You got Lewington, who they like and who they think can play, but he's also a lefty, so he's probably unlikely. I mean, as far as righties go, you're looking at Bowie and they've got a dozen defensemen age 22 or younger.
Lucas Johansson, Connor Hobbs.
Johansson's a lefty. Hobbs is a righty. But I got to think those guys are going to need
a little seasoning first. Yeah,
for sure.
Although, I'll tell you, Hobbs put up some big numbers with Regina.
Yeah.
And if he comes along quickly in Hershey and the Caps are struggling to put up offense, maybe he gets a quick look.
He looks great.
Yeah.
And he's a great kid and everything. But you know what? You got to wait and see. Josh Godfrey's a guy who came along with a similar resume, had a bomb
hammer
of a shot.
Yeah.
Just never worked out. I don't know that he ever really even established himself at the American League.
You don't
want
to rush him.
Godfrey was a second rounder, and Hobbs is a fifth. So you just never know until it plays out.
So, all right. So there's the predictions for the Caps. Did you mention the third pair? Did you say?
The third pair is kind of in flux. Probably Orpik and TBA.
Right.
TBD.
So we're a couple of weeks now from camp when some of these questions and everything starts getting hammered out. We're here with Mike Vogel on our Caps Face-Off podcast. Nice enough to come in here on a beautiful day, spend some time talking hockey. We've got a couple of minutes left. Let me just ask you your love of hockey, where it came from. Was that from the time you were a kid?
Yeah.
And is this sort of, we kind of briefly touched on it, do you still kind of feel like you're living the dream that this is what you get to do?
Absolutely. I mean, every day is different. Every day is great. Like, you know, it's a grind for sure, but none of us who do this are looking for sympathy for anybody. We love doing it. But for me, I mean, it was I was born in Michigan. My dad played in high school and played beer leagues, you know, when I was a little kid. Took me out. I'm the oldest in my family. There are three of us. And took me out when I was probably three or four. Put me on the double runners, and we went to in Lansing, Michigan, this little place called Potter Park, and they'd freeze it. My favorite part was the warm room with the fire and the hot chocolate afterwards at that point.
Which would still be my favorite part of it.
But, you know, then he started freezing our backyards. We moved to Boston, and so I was there when, you know, Bobby Orr, Phil Esposito, those big bad Bruins of the early 1970s.
So were you a Bruins fan, or were you
a
Red Wings fan from?
Yeah, no, my dad was a Red Wings fan, but I was a Bruins guy.
Right.
They were. I mean, I watched them win a couple of cups there, and and then we moved to Chicago, and I never did latch on to the Blackhawks because they only put half their games on TV. But we would play. My dad would freeze the backyard. My sister is the youngest, and she would get the rule was, you know, 2 hours of hockey and then 2 hours of my sister and her friends skating around in circles. We would pool our money. We'd pool quarters and go and buy her ice time from her. Go away, you bother me, get lost.
Right.
You know?
I'm not sure who's smarter.
I know.
The boys for buying it or for the girls for getting
she
the money.
Made some money.
I think everyone
money
made
off
out in that.
Yeah, it's you know, and even like when I was a kid in Boston, I had to go to bed after the second period of all the games. So my dad would I'd come down in the morning, and in longhand on yellow legal notebook paper would be the summary of the third period. Sometimes there would be just the penalties would be.
he wrote that for you?
Yeah, because I wanted
it.
You know, because I would come down, and then I would sit there. He'd be gone already, and I would have this, and then I would use it to get my eraser out and keep my own stats.
Yeah.
In those days, you know, sure.
I used
no
to
internet.
Do that. So I grew up in Long Island, covering the, you know, watching the Islanders as a kid, and I had a like a reporter notebook almost with the center line, and I would write in the morning. I'd wake up. And I would open the newspaper, and I would write down goals, assists, penalties, how many saves. And I have books and books of just stats from the Islanders.
That's cool.
And, like, it was just stuff. During games, back when they sold, like, yearbooks, so you'd buy, like, the Islanders yearbook and had a picture of all the players, I would lay out. So every time if Mike Bossy scored, I'd open up all the pages to Mike Bossy, so I'd have everything there in case I needed, in case anyone was going to ask me a fact about Mike Bossy. I had all his information right in front of me. Then every time a new person would score, I would open it up. So those are like, that's when you're like, man, wouldn't it be great if I could, you know, do, and then, you know, all of a sudden you get to meet these guys and work with them. It's pretty awesome.
I remember when I was in grade school, we would have a free period, and I was a goaltender. I played for Montgomery Hockey and Good Counsel High School, and I would go and find the Sports Illustrated. Back then, they were really heavy on pictures, and I was, and like most goaltenders, you're an equipment, you know, kind of nerd, right? So I would flip to the pictures. I wouldn't even read the articles. The articles by Michael Farber were probably the best written articles out there. I went straight to the pictures.
Didn't care.
Nope. I went straight to the pictures. And I would look and I would study Mike Vernon's pads and his locker and his glove and what stick he's using. And then, you know, just Van Beesbrook. Oh, yeah, what is he wearing? You know? And so that was kind of how I spent my days. I watched most Caps games that were on television.
Really?
The ones that were on the West, in the West, I didn't see any of those, but.
So were you ever at, and again, we're going to wrap up here in a minute, were you ever at a Stanley Cup game with the Bruins when you were a kid?
No. They were, tickets were really hard to come by, really hard to come by. I went to one game there when I was a kid in the 3-4 years that we lived there. Went to a few games at Chicago Stadium and had a piece of a season ticket package there for a little while at the old building, which was something special.
You consider yourself a Chicagoan, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's where I spent most of my life and my formative years, and went to college and all that stuff. Yeah. So
we again, going back to the Islanders real quick. We my uncle, which is to say the man my aunt, the married man my aunt was dating at the time, he had season tickets to the Islanders and knew a security guard. So he used to sneak me into the dressing room at the Coliseum. So, A, I was at their second Stanley Cup win, the night that they won it, beat the Minnesota North Stars, and Butch Goring was Conn Smythe. We're all chanting, Butch. Yeah. I was 9, and I wanted to run out on the ice and jump in. And he was like, are you crazy? I'm not letting him get on the ice. But
people did it then,
people
too.
They jumped the boards. Yeah. And then years later, when I did the Islanders broadcast crew, I worked with Butch.
Yeah,
and I sat at lunch. Great guy.
That's cool.
And he's telling me stories from back when he used to play Gretzky. We were at lunch one day in a hotel, and he's like, am I boring you? I was like, Butch.
Are you kidding me?
We could talk for 10. I was literally like, I just pushed my lunch
aside.
Tell me again. but one quick funny story. So we'd go in the dressing room all the time, in the hallway there, and I'm 9, 10 years old, and my uncle was a fairly wealthy guy. Clark Gillies comes walking out of the dressing room in nothing but a towel. He was a monster of a man.
Yeah.
And this guy whips out $100, which to a 9-year-old kid is like $1 million. And he goes, $100, pull his towel off right now. And I looked at the 100, and I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And I was like, no way.
No way.
But, yeah, those are fun days, and sort of your whole fandom is shaped by your experiences like that. So, so when do you head back out to Kettler? Are you gonna?
I'll probably wander down there tomorrow, or you know, sometime. I can't stay away for too long. I got back a couple of days ago, and was just, you know, straighten up stuff around the house, make sure my son gets off to college and all that kind
Where's
of stuff.
Where's he going?
Marquette. He's second year now.
Nice.
He's there. So, just all that kind of stuff. You know, the crossing of the T's and the dotting of the I's, but
and it's 100
before you hold on
miles
for
an hour.
It goes from 0 to 90 like that. You know, so it takes a little. That's why the trip to Florida is good. You get a you get, you know, it takes a little while to get used to watching the game again too, you know.
Right, training your eye to
yeah,
watch.
Yeah, exactly. So right. so you get to see those three more or less meaningless to us games against the Nashville, Tampa, and Florida teams. And then you come back up here and
right
boom, 2 days later, it's right into it, and you get those grueling, that first day of camp with the back and forths and the testings and the...
for them, not for you.
No, not for me.
Yeah, not for the players.
Rob, I had one more subject I wanted to bring up with Mike. Alex Ovechkin at, 32 years old?
We'll be 32,
We'll be 32 before the season begins.
A couple weeks
15th, yeah. What does he have to do, in your opinion, to get back to the 40-goal plateau? Can he do it?
I think he can. I think there's so much natural ability there. Look, we see him, he's that shot from the dot there from his office, that'll always be there, I think. So he's going to have that. He'll get 15 or so of those. But yeah, he's got to get to the net, I think, in other situations. And he can't be looking to do the old through the wickets,
guys,
that kind of. He's got to use his teammates a little better,
and he still dips into that.
Yeah, I mean, look, that can still be a weapon, but you can't do it every single time you enter the zone.
Right. Yeah.
And I also think that they're better when Backstrom carries into the zone or when Kuznetsov carries into the zone. Let Ovi find his space and let those guys, Backstrom and Kuznetsov, draw some people to them, because they're both capable of doing it. And look, people are always going to pay attention to Ovechkin, but when he's on the ice with those other two guys, either of those other two guys, and potentially Oshie as well, there's some tough decisions for opposing coaches and defenders. Who do I lean towards here? What area of the ice am I going to shade towards here? I think that he's good enough that in that split second that he has that space, he can do some damage. So I think it's a little bit of diligence. I think it's a little bit of an old dog learning one or two little new tricks.
He went
doesn't
to the net
have to
at
reinvent.
The beginning of the season and then kind of got away from it a little bit.
I feel like there's a lot of guys in this league that get away from that. It works for them. I thought Brett Conley last year, when he was hot, was going to the net a lot. And then later when he was cooled, he wasn't going there as much. So you'll see that with Smith Pelly too. I've seen it when he's hot, it's because he's around that paint a little bit, and he can do some damage from there. He's a hard guy to move. But then when he gets in these cool spots, you generally don't see him there as much. Yeah.
Look, I'll never doubt Ovi, because every time we do, he goes on an 8 goals and 10-game run. So, but it's all starting soon. We'll definitely do this more. Your blog is, you know, must read for me throughout a season as I prepare for the pre- and post-game shows, and it will be more, and we'll have you on again throughout the season.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, guys, thanks for tuning in to the Caps Face-Off podcast from Mike Vogel and Tarik El-Bashir. I'm Rob Carlin. We'll see you again next time.